For use in killing insects, weeds,
rodents, and other organisms described in the modern vernacular as pests.
And they are sold under several thousand different brand names. These sprays, dust, and aerosols are now applied almost universally to farms, gardens, forests, and homes. Non-selective chemicals that have the power to kill every insect, the good and the bad, to still the song of birds and the leaping of fish in the streams, to coat the leaves with a deadly film, and to linger on in soil. All this, though the intended target may be only a few weeds or insects. Can anyone believe it is possible to lay down such a barrage of poisons on the surface of the earth without making it unfit for all life? They should not be called insecticides, but biocides.
A spokesman for the chemical industry, Dr. Robert White Stevens.
The major claims in Miss Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, are gross distortions of the actual facts, completely unsupported by scientific experimental evidence and general practical experience in the field. Her suggestion that pesticides are in fact biocides, destroying all life, is obviously absurd in the light of the fact that without selective biological activity, these compounds would be completely useless. The real threat, then, to the survival of man is not chemical, but biological, in the shape of herds of insects that can denude our forests, sweep over our croplands, ravage our food supply, and leave in their wake a train of destitution and hunger, conveying to an undernourished population the major diseases and scourges of mankind. If man were to faithfully follow the teachings of Miss Carson, we would return to the Dark Ages, and the insects and diseases and vermin would once again inherit the earth.
Rachel Carson. Here is CBS News correspondent Eric Severi.
Good evening. We are living in what has been called the synthetic age, the age of the atom, the missile, the frozen TV dinner. In the next hour, you will hear that this is also the age of the wormless apple and the calculated risk. Miss Rachel Carson and those who agree with her charge that risks involved in the use of chemical pesticides far exceed the benefits they provide, including wormless apples. In the heat of this controversy, one is reminded of Abraham Lincoln's first words to Harriet Beecher Stowe. So you're the little lady who wrote the book that made this great war. Sit down, please. Tonight we shall sit down in an attempt to examine a controversy and a problem that begins here with the insect. Damage caused by pests in this country alone an estimated $14 billion a year. We compete for our food with about 3,000 different species of insects. Some, carrying disease, attack man directly. The insects were here perhaps 400 million years before man arose. And some scientists believe that because of their strength and adaptability, they will be here 400 million years after man vacates. It is said that their inheritance of the Earth, if it comes, could result from a few false moves on the part of man. Today, man's defense rests primarily on chemical poisons. Brewed in flasks and test tubes, synthetic organic pesticides are the major weapon. Dr. Robert White Stevens, assistant to the director of research, American Cyanamid Company, explained these chemicals to producer Jay McMullen.
Organic pesticides are simply those compounds which contain carbon. And synthetic organic pesticides are compounds which have been synthesized by the chemist in the laboratory, taking fragments of various other substances and putting them together into a new molecular configuration.
The total number of pesticide formulations registered for sale, 55,500. They come in insecticides, fumicides, fungicides, nematicides, rodenticides, and herbicides. We are told, conquer crabgrass and kill lawn insects with one easy application. Put the squeeze on garden insects and plant disease. Kills aphids, Japanese beetles, mites, thrips, earwigs, and tent caterpillars. Anytime is spray time. According to the National Academy of Sciences, 28% of our cropland under cultivation is sprayed each year with pesticides. The country's total amount of land treated with pesticides is estimated at more than 194 million acres. The use of pesticides is defended by industry, government, and many farmers for reasons you are about to hear. First, the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Luther Terry, on pesticides and human health.
Pesticides have contributed considerably, I would say greatly, to health in this country. An example in this direction, I think, is the control of malaria, which has been made possible in this country by the use of pesticides, insecticides. For instance, back in 1935, we had over 150,000 cases of malaria in the United States. Today, we have virtually none, and the few cases that are seen are usually brought in from abroad. Also, in terms of control of many other diseases, including encephalitis, murine typhus fever, and many others. I think that one should appreciate that though it has been of considerable importance in this country, worldwide, the use of insecticides and pesticides in the control of human disease have been probably of even greater significance.
The United States Department of Agriculture also defends the use of pesticides. Secretary of Agriculture Orville Freeman.
Without the use of some of these controllants, some of these pesticides, and some of these chemicals of various kinds, why we would let us say, where food and agricultural production is concerned, if not insect ascendancy, at least insect equality, and we'd be moving on the down, not the upside.
Many of the new synthetic chemicals are highly toxic contact poisons. Inhalation or a few drops on the skin may cause human illness or death. But we are told,
when pesticides, registered pesticides, are used in accordance with label instructions and recommendations, then there is no danger to either man or to animals and wildlife.
Many of these chemicals are sprayed on our food crops, and tolerances or tiny residues of 127 different pesticides are permitted by law to be present on the food we eat. Are these residues safe? George Larry, Commissioner, United States Food and Drug Administration.
I do not know of any human injuries caused by an amount of pesticide on a food product which did not exceed the tolerance.
Even though a substance may be toxic or very poisonous in a certain amount, as pesticides are, in smaller amounts, it can be used safely. Is that the general principle?
Yes, they're not. I wouldn't say they are all very toxic. They run the gamut from relatively safe ones to very toxic ones. But the tolerances are all based on the principle that you've just stated.
The maximum pesticide residues permitted on the food we eat are 100 times smaller than the amount fed, with no sign of ill effects, to a generation of laboratory animals. Dr. Wayland Hayes, toxicologist, Public Health Service.
There's no evidence that the small doses of pesticides that we do get are causing any harm. The only effect that can be measured objectively is the storage of one of them, DDT, in the tissues of most people. The amount stored in ordinary people who eat ordinary food and have no occupational exposure is less than 10 parts per million. This storage has not caused any injury that we can detect.
Up to now, we have presented only one side of the pesticide controversy, but there is more to be said. Miss Rachel Carson.
We've heard the benefits of pesticides. We have heard a great deal about their safety, but very little about the hazards, very little about the failures, the inefficiencies. And yet the public was being asked to accept these chemicals, was being asked to acquiesce in their use, and did not have the whole picture. So I set about to remedy the balance there.
Excerpts of Miss Carson's remedy, Silent Spring, first appeared in the New Yorker magazine on June 16, 1962. Then Houghton Mifflin Company published the complete text, and Rachel Carson's attack was launched. Chapter 2, The Obligation to Endure.
It is not my contention that chemical insecticides must never be used. I do contend that we have put poisonous and biologically potent chemicals indiscriminately into the hands of persons largely or wholly ignorant of their potentials for harm. I contend, furthermore, that we have allowed these chemicals to be used with little or no advance investigation of their effect on soil, water, wildlife, and man himself.
Chapter 6, The Earth's Green Mantle.
Many herbs, shrubs, and trees of forest and range depend on native insects for their reproduction. Without these plants, many wild animals and range stock would find little food. Now, clean cultivation and the chemical destruction of hedgerows and weeds are eliminating the last sanctuaries of these pollinating insects and breaking the threads that bind life to life.
Chapter 7, Needless Havoc.
We poison the caddis flies in a stream, and the salmon runs dwindle and die. We poison the gnats in a lake, and the poison travels from link to link of the food chain, and soon the birds of the lake margins become its victims. We spray our elms, and the following springs are silent of robin song, not because we sprayed the robins directly, but because the poison traveled step by step through the now familiar elm leaf earthworm robin cycle. When the public protests, confronted with some obvious evidence of damaging results of pesticide applications, it is fed little tranquilizing pills of half-truth. We urgently need an end to these false assurances, to the sugarcoating of unpalatable facts.
Chapter 16, The Rumblings of an Avalanche.
Spraying kills off the weaklings. Inevitably, it follows that intensive spraying with powerful chemicals only makes worse the problem it is designed to solve. The list of resistant species now includes all the insect groups of medical importance.
Beyond the dreams of the Borgias.
So thoroughly has the age of poisons become established that anyone may walk into a store and without questions being asked, buy substances of far greater death-dealing power than the medicinal drug for which he may be required to sign a poison book in the pharmacy next door. In river or lake or reservoir, or for that matter in the glass of water served at your dinner table, are mingled chemicals that no responsible chemist would think of combining in his laboratory. And there are so-called tolerances, which permit small residues of most of these chemicals to occur on food.
The human price.
Little is said about the hazards of the fad of gardening by poisons or of insecticides used in the home. The sudden illness or death of farmers, spraymen, and others exposed to appreciable quantities of pesticides are tragic and should not occur. But for the population as a whole, we must be more concerned with the delayed effects of absorbing small amounts of the pesticides that invisibly contaminate our world. We have to remember that children born today are exposed to these chemicals from birth, perhaps even before birth. Now, what is going to happen to them in adult life as a result of that exposure? We simply don't know, because we never before had this kind of experience. Now, we know from experiments on animals that many of these chemicals accumulate in body tissues. We know that some are liver poisons, others are nerve poisons. And for still others, we have evidence that they produce mutations and in various other ways are exceedingly dangerous materials. Now, all of these things, even any one of them together, would be ample cause for caution. But I think added together, they mean that unless we do bring these chemicals under better control, we are certainly headed for disaster.
Silent Spring became the Book of the Month Club selection for October. Naturalist and Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas said,
"Silent Spring is the most important chronicle of this century for the human race."
The New York Times reported, "The men who make the pesticides are crying foul, and companies are preparing briefs in defense of their products."
Now, although there are a number of scientific errors, misquotations, and obvious misinterpretations in her book, it must be admitted that much of her material is, in part at least, scientifically accurate. The area of disagreement between Miss Carson and students of applied agricultural chemistry, however, will lie in her clearly misplaced emphasis. She discounts and deliberately depreciates all those safety measures which research laboriously has developed and built into each new agricultural chemical that emerges, while she concomitantly bills the possible and alleged hazards of these compounds to horrible and simply staggering dimensions.
Time magazine agreed. It called Miss Carson's book an emotional and inaccurate outburst. But the majority of magazines and newspaper reviews and editorials were favorable. A New York Times editorial suggested that Miss Carson would be as deserving of the Nobel Prize as was the inventor of DDT if her book helps to arouse enough public concern to immunize government agencies against the blandishments of the hucksters and enforces adequate control. Silent Spring did have an impact in Washington. At the Food and Drug Administration, Commissioner George Lehrig said,
"I think very definitely it had an impact on the Food and Drug Administration. I think it causes all of us to take a new look at our responsibilities to the general public."
At the Department of Agriculture, Secretary Freeman,
"Let's say the book, I believe, will have helped the American people in alerting them that we need to do more work, but we also need to be personally conscious. This is like anything else. The government isn't going to do it for you. Somebody else isn't going to do it for you. You're basically going to have to do it for yourself. And that means to protect yourself, and that means to see to it that your government protects you where you can't protect yourself."
During the past years, do you think that the public was sufficiently appraised of the potential hazards of pesticides?
The answer I could say very quickly is no.
At his press conference on August 29, 1962, President Kennedy was asked,
"There appears to be growing concern among scientists that the possibility of dangerous long-range side effects from the widespread use of DDT and other pesticides. Have you considered asking the Department of Agriculture or the Public Health Service to take a closer look at this?"
"Yes, I know that they already are. I think particularly, of course, Ms. Carson's book, but they are examining the matter."
The next day, the administration announced that the government pesticide program would be reviewed by the Federal Council on Science and Technology and by a panel of the President's Science Committee. CBS reports the Silent Spring of Rachel Carson will continue.